The phosphate industry contributes a great deal to the state's economy, but at what cost? This is Florida Matters.
Support for Florida Matters comes from the Hospitals of BayCare Health System, providing more than 100 health seminars, classes, and events each month. BayCare's mission is to build a healthier Tampa Bay. Register for a complimentary health seminar, class, or event at BayCareEvents.org.
From the Donna Studio at WUSF Public Media, I'm Robin Sessingham. Phosphate mining and production take a heavy toll on the state's environment, but it's also a key contributor to the economy. Joining me in the studio to talk about phosphate's impact on Florida is Tip Fowler. Tip is the CEO of JDC Phosphate. He's a veteran of the fertilizer and mining industry, and his company, JDC Phosphate, is developing a new process called Improved Hard Process that he says removes the threat to the environment and produces higher quality phosphoric acid at lower costs than current methods. Tip, welcome.
Thank you.
Bill Lambert is the Economic Development Director for Hardee County. In his previous role as chairman of the Hardee County Board of Commissioners, he helped craft and negotiate a mining agreement with Mosaic to secure $40 million for economic development. So, Bill, welcome to Florida Matters.
You.
And Dr. Stephen Richardson is the Reclamation Research Director with the Florida Industrial and Phosphate Research Institute, and he deals with research on environmental topics such as land reclamation, habitat restoration, and hydrology. Welcome, Dr. Richardson.
Thank you.
So I grew up in Polk County. Phosphate mining for me was just a fact of life. I mean, we fished in phosphate pits, and we took school field trips out to the mines to look for fossils, and then we eventually built houses on old phosphate land. But, you know, outside of Florida, it's not really that well known. Tip, why is it important to mine for phosphate? What does it do for us?
Mined phosphate rock is the essential raw material for making phosphate fertilizers.
What kind of yield does phosphate fertilizer give us versus not fertilizing with phosphate?
Fertilizers of all sorts, nitrogen, phosphates, and potash, contribute 50% of the yield for plants today. So said another way, if there was no fertilization, we'd be producing half the food that we would otherwise produce. There would certainly be food shortages in many, many parts of the world.
Bill, what does phosphate mining contribute to Florida's economy?
Well, certainly if you look at the impact on the Port of Tampa alone, it's probably number one in cargo. I think it's probably around a $17 billion impact for this area. Maybe 100,000 direct jobs are related to phosphate mining and the ancillary businesses that are needed to support mining. It is a giant economic engine for this state. As I see it, it's part of our strategic national interest to have a viable food supply, and you cannot have it without good fertilizers and phosphate.
Let's talk about the phosphate process itself, the mining process.
The phosphate industry consists of two major processes, the mine and the chemical plant. The mine has nothing to do with the chemical plant. So the mine takes and mines the phosphate rock. It beneficiates the phosphate rock, which means it makes it pure enough for the chemical plant to consume.
And that's when they create the slush?
That's the slurry that is ultimately sent by rail or other means to the chemical plant where it's converted into fertilizer. But the mine, in my view, has two products and one waste product. The first product is phosphate rock. The second product is reclaimed land. The waste product is clay. At the chemical plant, it consumes the phosphate rock and produces phosphate fertilizers, its product, and a waste product, phosphogypsum.
I want to bring Dr. Richardson in here, just talking about the phosphate process. Let's just describe for people who may not have seen a mine. It's a very destructive process. I mean, they're scraping the entire top of the land off. And if you do fly over it, it looks like the surface of the moon. So there's no getting around how destructive this process is. And since the 1970s, I believe, the state has required the phosphate companies to reclaim the land. In other words, you got to put it back when you're done. Dr. Richardson, is it possible to reclaim the land?
Yes. Well, you have to define what reclaim means. Reclamation is very broad, and reclamation means to return the land to some useful purpose. In some cases, it may include shopping centers, it may include housing developments, farmland. habitat for wildlife, and including wetlands. And it's much more difficult to put back wetlands. There's a lot of expense that goes into that, in fact. The short answer is yes. It's possible to reclaim the land and put it to a useful purpose.
Make it livable again is what you're saying.
Make it livable and useful,
you
yes.
Could, okay. If people think, okay, I'm looking now at pristine Florida natural habitat, they're going to come in and mine that. I want that back. That's not going to happen.
Not in the short term. However, we've made, those who've been doing research, the industry themselves, the regulators, have done a great job in improving our ability to reclaim lands. And I've been at least happy to see that there are some very good examples of restored habitat.
I want to get back to the idea of national interest, because if phosphate is such a critical part of growing food, and we know that there's only a certain amount of phosphate. The mines in Polk County have already been closed down recently in the last couple of years, and that's why Mosaic is moving south to find more phosphate. Is there such a thing as peak phosphate? Are we going to have to rely on places like Morocco or Saudi Arabia to import our phosphate like we do for oil, Tip?
My opinion, no, there's not. The reserves of phosphate are expandable from the standpoint that as lower-grade reserves become usable, then those reserves expand. So the phosphate reserves around the world are concentrated in Morocco. More than two-thirds of all the phosphate rock reserves suitable for the current process are in the country of Morocco. However, there are many places around the world with lower concentration phosphate rock reserves that can and will be used in the future.
So you talk about expanding reserves, and I think this segs into what you're doing out there at JDC Phosphate, because you're coming up with some new technology. Why don't you describe it?
Okay. What our process was designed to do is to take phosphate rock, and we can accommodate very low-grade phosphate rock, unlike the current process that's dominant today. Take phosphate rock, carbon source, which we use petroleum coke, and sand, and use high-temperature chemical reaction to evolve phosphorus, elemental pure phosphorus from the phosphate rock, make phosphoric acid out of that phosphorus, and from that phosphoric acid make fertilizers and other phosphate-containing products. We would do that at a lower cost than the existing process. We do it without the production of any phosphogypsum at all.
Okay, that is a great point. Let's stop there, because these phosphogypsum stacks have caused a lot of environmental problems. They leaked radioactive water into the Alafaya River, basically killing that river for a while. Now we've got this sinkhole that opened underneath a phosphogypsum stack at Mosaic's New Wales fertilizer plant last year, and that leaked hundreds of millions of gallons of radiated water into the aquifer, and it was weeks before the public knew about it. So these are a problem, and you're saying this process that you're using right now won't create these huge gypsum stacks.
Yeah, to the contrary, we will actually produce a second product. Rather than producing fossil gypsum, we'll produce an aggregate product that can be used for concrete and other building applications. And this product will not either leach radon or leach any metals or do anything bad. It's a completely inert product.
And you've got a demonstration plant going on now in Fort Meade.
In Fort Meade, Florida, that's right. We've demonstrated each of the parts of the process. We've proven each step on a batch process. We need to do it on a continuous basis. Once we do that, we're ready to go to a commercial plant.
So we invited representatives from Mosaic to join us repeatedly. They have repeatedly declined to participate, but they have not really shown any interest in new technology that wouldn't create the radiated phosphogypsum stacks.
The first point is they've got, you know, billions of dollars invested in this process, in the dominant process that they currently use to make phosphoric acid and fertilizers. We've kept them involved and kept them knowledgeable of our process, as we have all of the producers around the world. Some people are vitally interested, in particular smaller projects, that they view this as an enabling technology that can get them off the ground, to those that just want to see and wait and find out, you know, whether this will work and see the first commercial plant up and running before they adopt the technology. And Mosaic is in that spectrum of companies.
So you're still hopeful?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, my personal belief is that Florida is the place that can gain the most value from this new technology.
Bill, what is going on in Hardee County as far as phosphate mining? Mosaic just got a permit to expand there. Is that correct?
Mosaic owns or controls probably about 30% of the surface land in Hardee County. They're still acquiring land. Probably two-thirds of the county has phosphate reserves underneath it. So it's certainly going to be one of the final areas that's mined. There's certainly some mines down in DeSoto County to the south, and there's a little bit of phosphate left in Manatee County. In Hardy County, we have a little different perspective in that we can see what has happened to the north of us, and we're trying to be a little bit more sophisticated in how the land's put back together. As an economic developer, I'm extremely interested in making sure that those in Hardy County have a chance to make a living when the last drag line shuts down. We're urgently trying to diversify our economy before mining ends, because it's ended in Mulberry, it's ended in Fort Meade, it ended at Bradley Junction, Brewster, and those little communities that were totally dependent on the drag line kind of went away, and we want to stop that. I'd like to back up a little bit on the reclamation. I think that the state of Florida taking a strict environmental approach on phosphate reclamation was probably appropriate back in the 1970s. But today, when you look at a state that has 20 million people and 100 million visitors, the density of human is so great, none of our natural systems will support our needs with this type of population. So I think that we could be building water reservoirs. I know we could be doing a really good job of creating wetlands on clay settling areas. The state won't let the companies do that, or they won't give them credit for it if they do it.
So, Dr. Richardson, it sounds like these clay settling ponds are a big problem. How are they formed?
In mining, we're producing sort of three types of materials that are produced. One, of course, is the phosphate rock or the ore, but there are byproducts, sand and clay. And I should mention there's another material that's moved. It's called the overburden. That's all the material that's above the ore body. So we have overburden, sand, and clay. That's what goes back in the reclamation. The sand and overburden essentially are fairly similar to the native Florida soils. The clay is something different. It has to be handled differently. And some of the dikes you see as you ride through mined areas are dikes of clay settling ponds. And of course, we've been working on ways to, over the years, to find uses for clay settling ponds, and we've found that it's a very fertile material and it can be farmed. The challenge with it is that in a rainy environment, you have to shape the land and manage it, because you can't farm in mud. The other thing that's something that would be interesting to people is that working with a group right now that's trying to find a way to eliminate or mostly eliminate clay settling ponds. And the way they're trying to do that is by mixing the overburden material with the sand tailings, and then they mix the clay with that and produce an agricultural soil that would be quite suitable for production. That way, again, to eliminate or reduce the number of clay settling ponds. The clay settling areas are the most difficult things to come close to natural environment, although it is possible to restore wetlands on clay settling areas.
And to add to that, I'm looking at the efficiency of the post-mining scenario. In Hardy County, because there is so much clay in the matrix, it's estimated that 50% of the mined land in Hardy County will be covered under clay. And the wetlands that have to be recreated can't be recreated on the clay, so they have to be recreated on the better upland reclamation lands. So the net result of what we have left is a much smaller footprint. We're becoming an incredibly shrinking county because the amount of land that we have, we're not getting 100% of it back. We're getting probably 30 to 40% of it back, and maybe less.
That doesn't sound like a good deal.
If we could have a dual use for clay lands as wetlands, it would really help the Hardy County scenario at the end of the day. There wasn't as much clay in Polk County. It's just the way the sedimentary seas were formed.
So it was easier to reclaim?
It was much easier. There just wasn't near the volume of clay in the matrix.
Some years ago, in fact, it was back in the late 80s and in the early 90s, the Institute was worked with the University of Florida and others to do some tests on how to produce crops on clay settling areas. And what they found was that it was very, very technically feasible to produce a large number of crops, and including corn and soybeans and alfalfa even, which is not normally grown in Florida. But the problem is we're dealing about an economic environment, and so is it cost-effective to grow crops on clay settling areas? When there are other lands available, there are problems dealing with land ownership or land leasing.
And now we have all the old orange groves that aren't growing oranges anymore.
You have it. You've got it.
We have identified a crop that we think will work on clay settling areas. It's an oil bean. It's a legume. It's called Pongamia pinnata. And Mosaic has successfully grown it on clay settling areas. So we have great hopes that if Mosaic will continue to plant clay settling areas in Pongamia and other citrus growers will put it in the ground, we can have another industry.
Is it like a peanut?
It's a bean. It grows on a tree, or a pea, I guess, pea or bean. Mm-hmm. It's in a shell. You have to crack the shell off of it like a soybean, and then it has an oil that is very similar to soybean oil. It's not generally used as food production, but it has many other industrial uses, and it's a high-value oil. It's used in other parts of the world.
Well, that's interesting. Hopefully that'll get off the ground.
It may be a part of the equation that fits together.
This is Florida Matters, and we're talking about the state's phosphate industry. I'm Robin Sessingham. We'll be right back. I'm Robin Sessingham. This is Florida Matters, and we're exploring the impact phosphate mining and production has on the state. My guests are Tip Fowler with JDC Phosphate, Dr. Stephen Richardson with the Florida Industrial and Phosphate Research Institute, and Bill Lambert with Hardee County's Economic Development Council. So I wanted to talk more about the land reclamation process. Dr. Richardson, how do you think it could be improved?
I think the technology is quite good. One of the things we do, though, of course, in reclaiming, we do what the public wants. And there are certain regulations that are required. Well, in many cases, the land is required to be basically graded somewhat flat like it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I always look at the reclamation as an opportunity. Mining has created certain things, and I think in reclamation can be an opportunity to do whatever you want with it.
Build reservoirs. You'd love to see a water reservoir to help with the water supply. But that's not allowed right now, or why don't we do that?
Under current regulations, it's on new permits and so on that it's not allowed.
It frustrates me that Disney can go out and restructure the entire area around Orlando with new features and get permits to do it. And rather than the post-mining scenario capitalizing on those types of things, we have to smear it back down flat, and it's not as good as it could be. I just think we're minimizing the presence of phosphate due to regulations for environmental reasons.
So some environmental regulations, you're saying, Bill, are counterproductive to using the land.
They may have been fine with 7 million people. They are not fine with 20.
We know that the mining industry has the capability of digging large holes, which could become lakes. That's an opportunity if the public really wants it. You know, I think we can influence the rules and regulations so you can have those lakes. Water is a very important thing in Florida, and so I think you might be interested in something that we researched a few years ago, and that is we talked about clay settling areas
mm-hmm.
and about the possibility of having wetlands on clay settling areas. Well, we found that using a combination of wetlands on clay settling areas to actually treat water.
It cleans the water.
It cleans the water. Those wetlands can take out some of the nutrients you don't want into your other water, into your water supply.
Mm-hmm.
And also using the sand tailings, another byproduct, to filter it. So we can use, again, wetlands on clay settling areas to help treat the water, further treat it to take out the particulates with sand tailings, and then you can put that into a reservoir, or you can pipe it directly to some source, or you can inject it into the ground. And, of course, the ground is a great reservoir because there's no loss from evaporation.
Well, let me ask you a little bit more about water, because people that live downstream in the Charlotte Harbor area are very concerned about the mining going on upstream, about their water supply. Do they have reason to be worried? Could there be contaminants and radioactive contaminants coming down into some critical water supplies?
Well, potentially. We should mention this is very, very low radioactivity. So I think there are more concerns. Years ago, there were some clay settling areas that broke back in the 70s. And some of that clay went down into the Peace River.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, they have a reason to be concerned. However, this is where the rules and regulations are helpful. Clay settling areas are built in such a way now so that the possibility of a dam break is much smaller than it was in the past. So I think it's fairly safe now.
What about radon? We've got a lawsuit right now going on in Lakeland. This is Grasslands Community, which is a nice upscale golf and country club community. It's built on old phosphate land. And one of the residents is suing the Drummond Corporation, the company that developed Grassland, saying they're being irradiated from the radon that was created during the phosphate mining process. The Drummond Corporation knew about it and didn't warn people before they built.
I can't address that one directly. I can say just generally that the reason that you may have, and I'll say may have problems with radon gas is that many minerals contain radium. And if the radium in the soil is increased by bringing that up from the ore bodies below, you have the potential for more radon gas. Radon gas is only a problem if it seeps into a confined space and builds up. In other words, if you were standing on a place that was high in radium, giving off radon gas, basically the wind, the atmospheric turbulence brings it down to a level so it's not hazardous to you. But it's only when it accumulates in a building. That's where it's potentially a problem.
Tip.
I know there are many other hotter places than Lakeland. Certainly the radioactivity is not created through the mining process. Nothing is created. However, the radium, as Steve said, can become closer to the surface, which would increase the efficiency of radon production, which is a bad thing. But I think that there are many hotter areas. So you look like at Sarasota Beach.
You mean Sarasota, Florida?
Mm-hmm.
On the beach?
Yeah. There's phosphate that is close to the surface there. And so as a result of that, naturally occurring uranium and radon is there.
Should we be worried about going to the beach?
No.
Okay. You know, one thing I wanted to bring up, Bill, and I want to ask you as an economic development person, but is it sort of bothersome that Mosaic, that we get all the mining and the plants and the production and the environmental problems that go with mining, but the headquarters of Mosaic are in Minnesota? And sometimes it just feels like a bit like we're being colonized.
Certainly the absentee management of Mosaic is a bit of a problem, but they certainly throw an incredible amount of money at public relations to placate some of those circumstances. They're a large corporation. It's not uncommon for large corporations to have headquarters in other parts of the country or the world.
But we miss out on a lot of the economic advantages when the headquarters are not local. You know, here's how one analyst described the phosphate market in 2016. Oversupply, disappointing demand, weak pricing and margins. Phosphate producers experienced a tough year in 2016. So why are we having this battle in Manatee County over expanding and permits? Why do they need to expand when the supply is down?
Well, the process of permitting is long term, and you can't take a short term look at a market circumstance and not stop if you're a large company. They have to make certain that their reserves are there for years to come in the future. So
a weak market is not going to affect their plans to expand mining. Tip.
Yeah, markets come and go.
Yeah.
And I think that in essence, the demand continues to rise about 2% each and every year. And that's driven by the global population growth, it's driven by dietary changes, and it's driven by energy. You know, a lot of the corn that we grow in this country is used to make ethanol. So the demand continues to grow. What's caused the weakness in the market is additional supply. And there's additional supply that has come on stream in Saudi Arabia. Additional supply has come on stream in Morocco and some other places.
Africa, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Bill, are the mining jobs in Hardy County, are they well-paying? Are these the kind of jobs that people could get right out of high school and make a good living?
Yes, they are. And they're well appreciated. But the problem is they have a finite life. And again, part of our equation is to diversify. We want to blend in other components in our economy. We will enjoy the presence of mining while it's there, but we'd like to have a post-mining scenario that makes better utilization of the land and also is diverse enough that we don't end up with the same circumstances in Fort Meade and other areas that couldn't prepare for it. They were totally dependent on the mine, and when it was all mined out, those jobs were gone.
Okay.
And the efficiency of the land, the agricultural application of the reclaimed land wasn't there, so the ag markets couldn't really recover, and they didn't prepare for it. And we intend to prepare for it in Hardy County. I might add for clarification, Hardy County's mining ordinance prohibits chemical plants.
Why?
Because of gypsum and other issues.
So you'll allow the mining, but not the manufacturing?
We mine it and beneficiate it and ship it by rail or truck
up
to
Polk County.
And Hillsborough County.
Mm-hmm.
But JDC gives us an alternative to take advantage of that last phase of production and an increase in jobs.
Realistically, however, it's not likely that the chemical plants will move. They're very expensive propositions.
It's cheaper to move the rock to the plant
than
move
correct.
The plant to the rock.
And so what happens is that as a new mine might be developed, the beneficiation plant might be moved closer to the mine because of transportation costs. But the chemical plants are where they are, and they're not likely to be anyplace else, unless down the road they can put a plant someplace else.
Which is good for CSX, I guess, because then they move the rock.
That's right.
To the Dr. Richardson, is it worth it? Why can't we say, let's just preserve Florida's natural area, natural beauty? We're a state that's very dependent on travel and tourism. Let's just get our phosphate from China. Is it worth it?
I'll be happy to try to address that. I'm an environmentalist of sorts, a realistic environmentalist. I enjoy the environment. I also enjoy recreated environments as well as natural ones. But I'm old enough to have lived through the oil shortages that when we were at the mercy of OPEC, and I don't want that to happen again. The fertilizer industry is vital because the agricultural industry is vital. And so I'm willing to, like I say, even though I enjoy natural environments, this industry is so vital, and the mineral deposit is in Florida. So I think it's something that needs to go on, and I'm willing to, you know, do my best to help restore the land to the extent we can.
A realistic environmentalist.
I'm a realistic environmentalist. That's right.
If I could add to that, it's important to recognize that phosphate is where it is. And today, with the current process, more than two-thirds of global reserves are located in one country and one country only. It's Morocco. So, you know, Morocco is an ally. Morocco's been a good friend. Morocco's certainly got vested interest in continuing to produce and supply phosphate products, but at a price. And I think the more competition in the world, and particularly with such a productive farm economy, you know, here in the United States that we depend upon, having a vibrant phosphate marketplace with vibrant suppliers, including U.S. suppliers, is critical. And I guess what got me excited about what I'm doing and what we are doing as our company is that just like in 1975, when circumstances, timing, and technology changed from a no reclamation period to a reclamation period, in my view, it's time to take a look at how do we more effectively get phosphate products using a process that is sustainable, that doesn't have a high volume waste of any sort. That's a natural evolution, just like all industry has evolution, you know, that they'll go toward more sustainable, less wasteful processes that get more out of the raw material. That's what we're after.
That's it for today's show. I want to thank my guest, Tip Fowler, CEO of JDC Phosphates, Dr. Stephen Richardson, Reclamation Research Director at the Florida Industrial and Phosphate Research Institute, and Bill Lambert, Economic Development Director with Hardy County. Thank you all so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we'd love to hear from you. Comments are welcome at WUSFnews.org. Just click on the Florida Matters link, or you can tweet us at Florida Matters. Our producer is Stephanie Colombini. Our engineer is George Govin. Florida Matters is a production of WUSF Public Media. I'm Robin Sussingham. Thanks for listening.